starting in Luke. Open your Bibles, please. And you may want to get that pen out, that marker or Bible marking pen. Some important verses here. One is the one we're starting off with, Luke 1, verse 5. There was, in the days of Herod, the king of Judea, a certain priest named Zacharias, of the course of Abia, and his wife was of the daughters of Aaron, and her name was Elizabeth. Verses 6 and 7. And they were both righteous before God, walking in all the commandments and ordinances of the Lord, blameless. They had no child, because Elizabeth was barren, and they both were now well stricken in years. Luke is a great storyteller. He begins the narrative with a picture of the nation of Israel at its best. Zacharias and Elizabeth represent the believing remnant, that believing prophetic remnant of Israel, and the little flock of faithful believers that believe what God told them. Zechariah's name means Jehovah remembers. And Elizabeth, the word Elizabeth means oath of God. Well, if you put those two together, that's what Israel hoped for the Lord to remember his oath to them. And they were both righteous before God, walking in all the Old Testament commandments and ordinances of the Lord. Blameless, it says. Now, that doesn't mean that they were faultless. It doesn't mean they were sinless. Rather, they recognized and dealt with their sin in the way God required them to do. So they were walking in the ordinances and commandments of the Lord. So you start out with this couple. He's a priest. She is the daughter of a descendant of Aaron. One of the... Well, he was a descendant of Levi. And if you go to Exodus 6, you see that Aaron's wife's name was Elizabeth. Aaron's wife. Back in earlier history. So both John the Baptist's parents are going to be in the priestly line, descended from the priests of Israel. And what Luke does is to start out with this couple in Israel that represents Israel at its best, believing. They were the ones that believed God. They were that remnant, the smaller portion of Israel that was the believing remnant, prophetic remnant, believing what had been told, what had been prophesied. And they believed in a priestly nation, and yet they were under the law. Under the law, Zacharias and Elizabeth had no children because Elizabeth was barren, as we read in verse 7. So, when Luke picks up with their story, they both were well stricken in years, old people. And their physical condition represents the spiritual condition of the nation living under the law, unable to inherit the promise that God had given them through the law. And if we just look in, let me pull up this verse here, Galatians 3:19. This computer is running very slow today. 3:19. Wherefore then serveth the law? It was added because of transgressions. Till, how long was it added? Till the seed should come to whom the promise was made. And it was ordained by angels in the hand of a mediator. The law was given, the law and the ordinances were given, the oracles of God were given to Israel, according to Romans 3, verse 2. And it was ordained by angels in the hand of a mediator. Angels having to do with Israel, too. So, yet God could remember his oath to them, but this could only be done through what the Bible describes as a kinsman redeemer. And it is the kinsman redeemer, the Lord Jesus Christ, the Messiah, that Luke chapter 1 is going to introduce to us. The law of the kinsman redeemer in Israel was that the first, a redeemer would have to be of the kin related. That is why Hebrews chapter 2 says he took on himself not only the nature of angels, but took on himself the seed of Abraham. Look at Hebrews 2:16, if someone could post that. Hebrews 2:16, for verily he took not on him the nature of angels. Not, let me strike that word only, that's not in the text. he took not on him the nature of angels. Did he or didn't he? No, he didn't. But he took on him the seed of Abraham. And that's what we're studying in Luke, chapters 1 and 2, how that God reached into the nation of Israel from among the believing prophetic remnant of Israel and drew out some people to represent him and his purpose. And then among those people, John the Baptist. So we're studying his birth and his conception and the resulting facts and things that go along with it, and we'll find out some very interesting facts toward the end of the study. John the Baptist, who is the voice of one crying in the wilderness, to prepare ye the way of the Lord, is then introduced to us. Luke starts out at the very beginning with that couple, Zacharias and Elizabeth, and the things that we read down through this chapter. So as we look at chapter 1, we'll look at some other things here. In chapter 1, we see the tremendous prophetic understanding that these folks have of just what God is doing in Israel. Read verse 5 again, Luke 1:5. There was, in the days of Herod, the king of Judea, a certain priest named Zacharias of the course of Abia. And his wife, I always used to just read over that, but it's very important, the course of Abia. And his wife was of the daughters of Aaron, and her name was Elizabeth. Notice how Luke gives detail after detail. Who is Herod? He's the king of Judea. There are a lot of Herods in the Bible, so you have to be careful. If we look down in Luke 3, verse 1, reads, now in the 15th year of the reign of Tiberius Caesar, Pontius Pilate being governor of Judea, and Herod being tetrarch of Galilee, and his brother Philip, tetrarch of Iturea, and of the region of Trachonitis, and Lysanias, the tetrarch of Abilene. A tetrarch, what's that? It's a 1/4 of a territory. When something is divided into four parts and one leader is put over each part, that person is known as a tetrarch. He was a ruler of 1/4 of the land. So here is the son of Herod, the Herod in Luke 1 verse 5 that we read about to start off with, who's also the Herod in Matthew chapter 2, when the wise men came to Jerusalem seeking him who was the king of the Jews. There's that early Herod, Luke 1:5. The same Herod, the king, was there in Luke 3, well, let's see, 30 years later. There was a 30-year period of time between the beginning of Luke chapter 1 and Luke chapter 3, where John the Baptist is grown up and Christ comes to begin his ministry. This chapter in the Herod that's mentioned here in this chapter, Luke 3, is the son, actually, of the Herod in chapter 1, 30 years later. Let's look over in Acts, excuse me, in Acts 12, verses 1 and 2. Now about that time Herod the king stretched forth his hands to vex certain of the church, and he killed James, the brother of John, with the sword. That's one of the 12 apostles. Now this Herod is actually Agrippa the first. This is the grandson of Herod in Luke chapter 1. So it'd be the grandson of the Herod in Luke chapter 1. He'd be the son of the Herod in Luke chapter 3. And here you get after the crucifixion and ascension of Christ, resurrection and ascension, down, you know, several years later in Acts 12, and you find his grandson, the grandson of the man in Luke 1, verse 5. So you can see this line of Herods as you move down the line through the scriptures. These Herods, according to the secular historian Josephus, were half-breed relatives of Israel. They're called Idumeans. And if it sounds familiar, that's they were the sons of Esau. Esau's land, their area, was called Edom, and Edomites, and then it was corrupted going to a different language, possibly in Greek, and it's called Idumeans. Edomians. Idumeans. By the time we get down to X, where we're talking about here. That is, they were the sons of Esau, though. And the seed came down from Abraham to Isaac, and Isaac had two sons. Remember, Esau and Jacob were both descendants, grandsons of Abraham through Isaac. Remember, Isaac begat, Abraham begat Isaac and Ishmael, the father of the Arabs. And the seed came down through Isaac. Isaac begat Jacob and Esau. Esau was the father of more of the Palestinian people, the Edomites and Idumeans. So these are cousins, not direct descendants, but they trace their heritage back to Abraham. And so if we get down to, let's go ahead and look at Acts 25, verse 13. 25:13, and after certain days, King Agrippa and Bernice came into Caesarea to salute Festus. Okay, not Felix, Festus. This Agrippa is really Herod Agrippa the second, the great-grandson of Herod in Matthew chapter 2 and Luke 1, verse 5, where we started. And the reason for that is in Luke 1, verse 5, where it says he is the king of Judea, the Roman Senate, the king of Judea, let's see. We can see that that's what he had been granted. You know, we mentioned before about the Tetrarchs and their domains. Well, this was Herod's domain. The Roman Senate had given him a commission as the king of Judea at the recommendation of Anthony. According to Roman history, he has the commission from Rome to be a usurper king over Israel, not being a full-blooded Israelite, being under the thumb of the Roman government. So when you're reading about the Herods, just remember there is time involved between them. 30 years between Luke 1 and Luke 3. So let's read our verse here. Luke 1, 5. There was in the days of Herod, the king of Judea, a certain priest named Zacharias. That means Jehovah remembers. He was of the course of Abia, and his wife was of the daughters of Aaron, and her name was Elizabeth, which means the oath of God. This Elizabeth is bearing the lineage of her family, coming down as from the priests' families. notice that it says Zacharias was of the course of Abijah, and that is important because in verse 8 it says, Luke 1 verse 8, and I wish you could see these verses because it does make a difference seeing them. It says, and it came to pass that while he executed the priest's office before God in the order of his course, he was of the course of Abijah, and as he executed the priest's office before God in the order of his course. So we can take some dates fixed in our understanding. Verse 5 is going to help understand two things. We're going to deal with the nativity, the birth and conception, or conception and birth, of John the Baptist, and also of the Lord Jesus Christ. The first verse in the story gives you information that will allow you to date the birth of Christ, find out what date of the year he was born on, or very close to it, both year-wise and calendar-wise. That's the month and the day of it, of his birth. Notice that, excuse me just a minute here. Hold on a minute, please. In verse 5, he identifies Herod, the king of Judea. And secular history is a great source for these things. Josephus has a lot to say. This Herod died in 4 BC, according to our calendar. And when Rome brought our calendar into existence, they stretched our calendar back to the birth of Christ to say, well, they began saying BC or BCE, before the Christian era, before the birth of Christ, in other words. So AD, Anno Domini, the year of our Lord, how many years after his birth. But when they did so, they arbitrarily identified some markers. And what happens when you take our calendar and overlay it with the Roman calendar, you find it sometimes doesn't match out exactly. And that causes a problem. You know, it causes people to doubt the truth and distrust the truth when you get up and you preach that the Lord, well, that the calendar hinges on the birth of Christ. Zero is the date that Christ was born. And when we go through the scriptures that a person has to be 30 years old before he is ordained into a ministry in the Old Testament history, Old Testament scriptures. So we know that in his 30th year he began to minister. And we can count in, I think it's in John, in one of the four accounts of Christ's life, you can count the Passovers. There were three Passovers that went through his ministry. That his ministry went through. And then about a half a year later was when he was crucified. So we figure about 3.5 years. So that'd be 33.5 A.D. And people get up and preach that, well, Christ died in 29 A.D. at the age of 33. Well, that just causes distrust. There is an obvious conflict in the calendars when you're gathering your data for your information and what you're going to tell people. Make sure you're not using two different calendar systems that would, you know, give let you end up with this false, a contradiction. You know, if he lived 33 years and then died, and you start counting your 33 year at 0 AD, then he didn't die in 29 AD on that calendar. Maybe the other calendar he did die at 29. But get your information right, or don't say it. It just causes people to distrust. So it's not a contradiction in the Bible. It's a shortcoming in the laying out of the two calendars and the crossover between them. King Herod died in 4 BC on our calendar. On his calendar, it was 470. in the year 470. So if you have a Scofield Reference Bible, you can see at the top of your page it says 7 B.C. Now, why would it say 7 B.C. was when, you know, for those dates in Luke there, or in Matthew, excuse me, in Matthew. Well, in Matthew, Usher has the date 4, so it, we're talking about Luke that had it at 7. Let me look in my notes for a second here. Usher says at the top of in Matthew 2, it's 4 B.C. Why would he do that? Herod died in 4 B.C. Well, why then would Luke have the date as far back as 7 B.C.? So there's an apparent conflict there, a difference. For, saying that the conception of John the Baptist was 7 B.C. or B.C.E. And the reason for that is down in Matthew 2:13. And it speaks of the wise men. Pardon me. Matthew 2:13 says, "And when they were departed, behold, the angel of the Lord appeared to Joseph in a dream, saying, Arise and take the child and his mother and flee into Egypt, and be thou there until I bring thee word. For Herod will seek the young child to destroy him." Hold on just a minute, please. At the house, it says, at the house where Christ was, back in verse 11, where that's where the wise men came to worship him. Let's read Matthew 2, verse 11. "And when they were come into the house, they saw the young child with his with Mary, his mother, and fell down and worshipped him. And when they had opened their treasures, they presented unto him gifts, gold, frankincense, and myrrh." Well, those are verses and events that are often connected with Christmas, or I don't know about any mass, any mass going on about the birth of Christ, but with Christ's birthday, I should probably say. But notice they didn't go to the stable. They didn't go to the field where the shepherds were. They went to a house. And he's not a baby in the manger, in a feeding trough, in the stable there. He is a young child. It says, when they were come into the house, they saw the young child with Mary, his mother. That means that he had grown some. He had some time to grow a bit. He's not the baby in Nazareth, lying in a manger with swaddling clothes the night of his birth. This is later than that. So then Joseph takes Christ down into Egypt. Joseph takes his family, Mary and the baby Jesus, down into Egypt. Or the young child Jesus, I should say. So as we look down a few verses in Matthew 2:19, "But when Herod was dead, behold, an angel of the Lord appeared in a dream to Joseph in Egypt." So in this chapter, Herod is dead, and they have his death properly identified for you at 4 B.C. And looking in Matthew 2:16, "Then Herod, when he saw that he was mocked of the wise men, was exceeding wroth," or angry, and, well, wroth is the word, "and sent forth and slew all the children that were in Bethlehem and in all the coasts thereof for from 2 years old and under, according to the time which he had diligently inquired of the wise men." I think it's ridiculous, don't you, that he diligently inquired. He got the best information he could so he wouldn't murder more babies than necessary. Just 2 years of them. Wow. What a hypocrite, I guess. I don't know. He didn't claim to be a believer, but being very careful not to kill more than 2 years worth of people. Man. Just a second again. The star appears at the birth of Christ, and you learn that, we find out about that in Luke 2, where it is implied the star appeared there at the birth of Christ, but it's not directly stated, and you cannot make that hard and fast rule about it. Christ could have been as much as 2 years old at that point. That being why Herod wanted all the babies under 2 killed. Why not under 6 months? Or why not 5 years old and under? He picked 2 years because that matched the time when the wise men first saw the star in the east, which means Christ could have been born perhaps as much as 2 years prior to the death of Herod. And if he died by our calendar, if Herod died by our calendar in 4 BC, it means that Christ could have been, 6, you know, if you add the 2 and the 4, you get 6 BC. He could have been born as far back as 6 BC. Now, I don't know when he was born. I just know that it is possible, based on the account here, could have been born as far back as 6 BC, according to that calendar. So, Usher has his dating system, and he is a chronologist of great renown and widely accepted. I've never been comfortable with the modern dating systems. They don't, you know, well, you start off with people that don't have the same regard for the Bible itself as the man like Usher did. But I can tell you that Herod died in Matthew 2, verse 29, and up to 2 years before that, Christ was born. You identify that Herod then. Hold on a minute, please. There's a 2 year separation there between the two events. So, but the death of Herod in Matthew 2, and you can identify within 2 years of when Christ was born, as far as the year is concerned. However, in Luke 1:5, you can also identify on the calendar the month and the date, pretty close to the date of the birth of John the Baptist and of Jesus Christ. By this information, Luke is where Zacharias was of the course of Abia. And the course of Abia is talking about the way that David, in his wisdom, divided up the priesthood. Any Old Testament Jew would have understood immediately what that referred to, but you'll not find it in your concordance because it's not spelled A-B-I-A in the Old Testament. You know as well as I do that Isaiah, Isaiah, the different Hosea, or O-C, it's called, Hosea is called. The difference when they translate between Hebrew into Greek before it's recorded in the Bible, before it's mentioned in the Bible, the Hebrew name pronounced in Greek is spelled O-S-E-A, I think it is, instead of H-O-S-E-A. And Isaiah instead of Isaiah. And it's pronounced differently than Abia, for the course of Abia. we'll be finishing up here pretty soon, but the Old Testament, I'm going to have to finish it tomorrow, actually. Old Testament names are spelled differently between the Old and the New Testaments, because the New Testament was in Greek, Old Testament in Hebrew, and we find in the book, The Treasures of Christian knowledge, there's a cross-reference that helped out. Let's look at the verse in, we'll go to 1 Chronicles in the Old Testament. 1 Chronicles 24, 1-6. We'll read six verses here. Now these are the divisions of the sons of Aaron. Aaron was the priestly line, and they were priests, let's just go on and read it. The sons of Aaron, Nadab and Abihu, Eleazar and Ithamar. But Nadab and Abihu died before their father, and had no children before, the two that were left, Eleazar and Ithamar, executed the priest's office. David distributed them, both Zadok of the sons of Eleazar and Ahimelech of the sons of Ithamar, according to their offices in their service. And there were more chief men found of the sons of Eleazar than of the sons of Ithamar. And thus they were divided among the sons of Eleazar. There were 16 men of the house of their fathers, and 8 among the sons of Ithamar, according to the house of their fathers. Thus they were divided by lot. That was the way God worked with Israel at that time. It wasn't gambling or anything. It was the way God showed his will with the Urim and Thummim. They were divided by lot, one sort with another. For the governors of the sanctuary and governors of the house of God were the sons of Eleazar and the sons of Ithamar. And Shemaiah, the son of, I think he was one of David's 30 great men or mighty men. Shemaiah, the son of Nathaniel, the scribe, one of the Levites, wrote them before the king and the princes. And Zadok, the priest, and Ahimelech, the son of Abiathar, and before the chief of the fathers of the priests of the priests and Levites, one principal household being taken for Eleazar, and one taken for Ithamar. In other words, they wouldn't just, you know, there were 16 in one house and 8 in the other. They just wouldn't take the 24, 16 and 8, because that would be uneven. So they'd take one house and the other house, which would be an equal weighting between Ithamar and Eleazar. So because Eleazar has 16 households and Ithamar only 8, if they just let the 16 go, eventually they would root out the 8. So David, in his wisdom, said, here's what we'll do. 1 week we'll take from one side, one from this side, and the next week it'll become the job of the other side. And they rotated between the two families. And apparently those from Eleazar would go up half as often, or approximately half as often, before their turn repeated again, in other words. Now, each family had the responsibility to go up and be the governors of the sanctuary and the governors of the house of God. That is, they would go up and do the priestly service. Now, the people, they're scattered all over Israel. The 12 tribes have different locations all over Israel. Sons of Levi lived all over Israel. They didn't have a land of their own. They were the priest people. They would mix among all the whole nation of Israel. So the sons of Aaron were all over Israel too. They were the priests at that time. They lived in many places, had ministry in those places. But the temple was in Jerusalem, just one place. They could not minister in Jerusalem all the time. So each household has a 1 week course of service twice a year in Jerusalem. They would go up on a Sabbath and minister all that week through the next Sabbath and then go home. And it's important to understand how the courses work. If you notice in 2 Kings, we'll look at 2 Kings 11, verse 9. And the captains over hundreds did according to all that Jehoiada the priest commanded. And they took every man his men that were to come in on the Sabbath, and them that should go out on the Sabbath, and came to Jehoiada the priest. So they work from one Sabbath to the next, and the course lasts for that week. That's what the course is that's referred to other places in the Bible, like in Luke 1:5 that we read. They change priests every Sabbath. Now, when would they start? On the religious calendar of Israel, everything started with the Passover. And we'll pick it up there tomorrow and hopefully finish tomorrow about this exciting information God gives us in His Word.